are tuned into Lightly on the Ground Radio, produced at Richmond Independent Radio and broadcast on WRIR-LP 97.3 and worldwide at WRIR.org. We're exploring our food system, which includes everything from farm to table. It extends from a seed in a farmer's hand to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide front. We focus on the factors that each guest brings to growing and sustaining our food system. And while we're talking local, the ideas are pertinent to any food system. The conversation is part of a series on the future of farming, particularly in this case, the Farm Bill, which may be considered by our outgoing Congress. And joining us from the Washington offices of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition are Helen Dombalis, Policy Director for Marketing, Food Systems, and Rural Development, and Sarah Hackney, Grassroots Director. And Helen, I think I misspoke your title. Tell us a little bit about NSAC and how the work that you actually do.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you for having us on the air today. We're delighted to be here.
Thanks for
coming. I am a policy associate for NSAC, or the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. We are a coalition, as our name implies. We have over 90 member organizations around the country who really help inform the policy work that we do here in Washington, D.C. Our member organizations are made up of farmers and ranchers and other food system advocates who are passionate about everything from rural development to organic agriculture to local food systems and research, and really want to help inform the policy work that happens here in Washington to make a more sustainable and healthy farm bill for all people.
That's quite a challenge.
It is.
And Sarah, tell us about your work.
Sure. So I'm Sarah, and I am the grassroots director here at NSAC, and it's my job really to work with farmers and ranchers and consumers and concerned citizens on the ground and bring those voices to the conversation here in D.C. And that looks like, you know, making sure that folks know what is the Farm Bill, what's going on, how can I take action, how can I have an impact. We do things, we fly farmers in from all over the country to testify before Capitol Hill, to meet their legislator, to tell their story about why what they do matters. And we also work with folks really across the country trying to help them engage with what can be a really unwieldy and confusing piece of legislation.
Well, the name of it last year was a little confusing to me. What was it?
See? Are you saying in the Senate and then the House versions?
Yeah, it was something it was like a 5-word title for the Farm Bill.
Yes. So both the Senate and the House versions of the bill had different names. Each body of Congress independently works on their own version of the Farm Bill, and both of them really focused this year on risk management or crop insurance, which is, you know, as listeners know, important at this time in our country, given the drought, given the numerous climatic issues that we have seen in 2012.
Yeah, and something that Congress does, this is Sarah, is it's colloquially known as the Farm Bill, but they all put their own stamp on it, and the technical title of the bill. I think in the Senate it was the Agriculture Reform, Food and Jobs Act of 2012. You know,
right.
They like to stick the words that that people will that think people will feel good about, but in reality we know it as the Farm Bill.
So, and it's a really huge bill, and it covers a lot of ground. No pun intended. Let's focus on the small farm piece for a while. What is it in the Farm Bill that, say, our listeners could actually speak to their legislators about? But let's backtrack just a sec. Right now, we are, I don't care for the expression lame duck, but there are lots of people there who are going to be losing their jobs in a few weeks. But we have a Farm Bill that we've been working on for a long time. What are your feelings about whether to pass it this year or to wait for the new Congress to be seated and work on it then? Tell me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. We can both kind of chip in on that one. So here at NSAC, our members have pretty strongly voiced that we'd much rather see a bill completed this year in 2012. That's because there was a lot of really strong work, particularly done in the Senate, to fund critical programs and to make a down payment on really important food and farm program reforms. And we'd like to see that work continued and passed through here at the end of the year. Another really important reason to get a bill taken care of right away is that a number of really critical programs, particularly those that help small-scale farmers, sustainable growers, and folks working on local and regional food systems work, a lot of those programs expired on October 1st when the old farm bill expired. And until Congress acts, those programs are effectively on hold, on ice. And that could have really wide-ranging implications for folks on the ground doing really important work. And so it's really important to us and to our members that Congress gets to work right away.
Now, a lot of this money that comes through this system, this Farm Bill system, is grant money. Is that correct?
A lot of the work that NSAC covers does include grant programs. However, if you, you know, as you mentioned, if you look at the Farm Bill, it's a massive piece of legislation. It's lots of different acts that are all compiled together, or what we call on Capitol Hill omnibus legislation. And a lot of what NSAC advocates for are some of the smaller programs. The largest chunk of the Farm Bill goes to nutrition programs, and then another large chunk are the commodity and crop insurance programs. So when you take all of those and then look at what's left, those are a lot of the programs that we work on: conservation, local food, beginning farmers, rural development, which are, you know, less of the pie, but in our minds have such strong implications for the entire country's farm and food system. And they do include, as you said, grant programs. There are also microloan programs that help to fund rural economic development. There are conservation programs that really encourage farmers to protect natural resources. So it's a lot of different issues that we cover, from the environment to the economy to really to equity of our food system, to really ensure full sustainability.
Now, something that I'd really like to look closely at is the economic development part. We're very concerned about jobs, and we're very concerned about small businesses. And I saw on your blog, which is, tell us where the blog is so listeners can go see. It's sustainableagriculture.net.
You got it. It's just sustainableagriculture.net/blog. And you can also, it's linked right from our homepage at sustainableagriculture.net.
And there are stories there. Tell us a story of how a small pot of money has changed a community.
Sure, absolutely. So as Sarah said, we're based in Washington, D.C., advocating directly to Congress, but we use our grassroots capacity to collect those stories. So right now we are in the midst of what we're calling a What's at Stake blog series, and it's 10 programs over 10 weeks that, as Sarah said, expired on October 1st when the 2008 Farm Bill expired. And until Congress gets a new bill done or in some way funds those programs, they're on hold. Go ahead.
If there is a program, like say they got a grant to do this project, to open a business or whatever, and as of October 1st, the payments stop even though they were committed to?
Not necessarily,
okay.
No. This is for new grant cycles of these programs. For example, there are several grant programs where typically you see a funding availability late fall or early winter. So it's that grant cycle, this next upcoming grant cycle, that's on hold for most of these programs. And so one example of a specific story of this rural economic development, there's something called the Rural Micro Entrepreneur Assistance Program, or RMAP for short. And that program is an example of the microloans that I was referencing. We know that there's out-migration from rural communities. We know that we need to create non-agriculture-related jobs in these rural communities to really keep these communities strong and to really create jobs and economic recovery. So this program applies funding to organizations that have training and technical assistance to then provide microloans out to startup businesses or businesses that just need that little extra boost. So you can find examples on our website, but there is one that we just published last week from Nebraska. A guy owning a tool workshop knew that he wanted to expand, knew that he had the customers waiting, but needed to get a bigger facility, a bigger workspace, and therefore could then expand. So he was able to get business financing but also the training technical assistants to really scale up. And as a result of that, was able to hire new staff and attract new customers.
Well, it seems like that has an impact on at least dozens, if not a couple hundred people. See, my thought is that these small amounts of money make such a large impact, whereas if you take a huge chunk of money and give it to one large company, the impact is very different.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the idea is that people in rural communities know what's best for people in rural communities. They see a building on Main Street that's been sitting empty, and they know that they have customers who are wanting their products and just need to get into that store on Main Street. They know that if they build a bigger facility, they'll be able to serve additional customers and then create an entire industry, not just for themselves, but for the entire community.
So what could listeners do in order to help get this money back into flow?
There's a lot that can be done, and this is something that, you know, Congress doesn't move unless we ask them to. You know, we won't see the kind of food and farm policy that supports jobs in communities, that supports the kind of food system we want, unless we ask for it. And so it's absolutely critical that folks know what's going on, they stay in the loop, and that when they have the opportunity, they reach out and contact their legislator directly. I mean, Virginia particularly matters. With Representative Cantor, in many ways, he holds the reins to what the House of Representatives does and doesn't consider. And particularly for folks who live, for whom Representative Cantor is their representative, this is a critical time for folks, for him to hear from you and for him to know that folks in Virginia care about this kind of work and want to make sure that federal government supports it through the Farm Bill. Folks who are interested can check out sustainableagriculture.net. We have a petition right now to Congress asking them to make these kinds of investments in the Farm Bill, and we're gearing up for a big national call-in day on November 15th. That's Thursday of this week. Just to really want to flood every office across Capitol Hill with thousands of calls from people around the country who say, this is important, please take care of this, make sure this is a priority in the next few weeks and into the future. And that's something that folks who want to check out our website, you can do it at sustainableagriculture.net. It's a great place to go. And also, if folks sign up for our action alerts on the website, we'll keep you posted with more information on when else you can get involved.
All right. And now, did you get the I know that you were trying to get 50,000 signatures by yesterday. Did that happen?
Didn't quite hit 50,000, but we hit almost 22,000, which is pretty darn good. We're pretty excited about that, and we're going to be delivering those all across the Hill on Wednesday of this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's still some euphoria among the grassroots people about the elections, because so many referendum and issues and so many Congress people were voted in that was kind of a surprise.
For a number of reasons, you know, there's a lot of good things that came out of this recent election. One of the challenges is for folks at home who pay attention and care about this work is we don't ever get to check out. There's always something moving on Capitol Hill, and if you care about these issues, one can never assume that it's all taken care of, that it's all okay, and it's really important for folks to stay engaged. Even now the election's done, we've all had a little bit of a breather. Congress is coming back with a ton on their to-do list in the next 6 weeks, and it's very important that we stay engaged and stay in the loop and continue to communicate with our representatives about what we want them to be doing for our communities.
And it seems like the food system is really pretty basic. You know, even if you just look at Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, our basic need is for food and water.
Absolutely. Everybody eats. Everybody has a stake in this.
Yes.
Toss me a carrot. I'm gonna keep well. My vegetables cart off and sell. My vegetables, I love you most of all. My favorite vegetable. I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so embarrassed. Oh, yeah.
of everybody eating, let's take a look at the Family Farms Food and People project part of it, where the beginning farmer and rancher development and the farm-to-school programs and how we're actually trying to improve the food itself.
Sure. So first we can chat for a minute about beginning farmers. We know that the average age of a farmer in the U.S. is 57 and growing. We also know that if we want to continue to grow enough food to feed ourselves and to supply countries around the world, we need to do something about that number. So there is a lot of momentum in this country right now on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, to address the needs of young, beginning, and new farmers. And NSAC is really a very strong advocate for programs to provide training and technical assistance and really get beginning farmers what they need to be successful. We know that land prices are high. We know that there's been consolidation of land. We know that farming is not cheap and it's not easy. So one of the programs we support is the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program, which has been extremely successful up to this point in helping those beginning farmers. And then another thing that you mentioned is farm-to-school programs, which the idea or the concept is, just as the name implies, getting food, fresh local food from farms into schools. And that's important not only for kids, it allows kids to learn where their food comes from, that it doesn't just show up on their plate, that there's actually a story behind that food. It allows them access to more fresh food. But the other big piece of it, as we were talking a little bit about earlier, is that economic development piece. It's also a win for farmers. It increases a farmer's income. When they have a reliable source, they know that they can sell to a school or even another institution like a hospital or even a prison. It's a source of income for that farmer. And what it ultimately does is it keeps that money circulating in the community. So we are advocating for farm-to-school programs in the new farm bill that would really boost the ability of schools to purchase local food and ultimately benefit farmer income as well.
You know, we have a food policy council here in Richmond, and one of the things that we discovered when we were exploring our farm to school projects is that many of the schools have been built with or have had removed the kind of equipment in the kitchen that it takes to actually process fresh food, like all that's left is a microwave. Is there money in that bill for equipment or just for food?
That is definitely a challenge, it sounds like, in Richmond and for many communities across the country. School food service directors, in many instances, are motivated to purchase more fresh local food, but they do face that obstacle. There is advocacy work being done by a number of organizations to address that issue, not only in the Farm Bill, but actually in the Child Nutrition Reauthorization, which is a different piece of legislation that also happens about every 5 years. And while NSAC doesn't explicitly take that on as one of our national priorities, we do work with other organizations who are really helping to fill that piece, that infrastructure piece. You know, ultimately, you've got to have the entire system from the farm to the table, and getting the food prepared is obviously a step in that process. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's take a quick look at the David and Goliath part. Say there's a pot of money, the big pot of money. How likely is it that it would go to the small farm projects, such as the Sustainable Agriculture Coalition is working on, versus the large subsidies for field crops and that sort of thing?
That's actually one of the challenges that folks like us, that advocates who care about building a sustainable food system, face every day, in that historically, the Farm Bill was designed by and for sort of that model of agriculture, really the large-scale commodity production and the kinds of protection that it needs to sustain itself. And we're working every day to build more support and to make our policy more responsive to other kinds of agriculture, to level the playing field and to make sure, you know, there's a lot of different ways to grow food. And what we want to make sure from a policy perspective is that the playing field is level and that sustainable growers, that family farmers, are not at a disadvantage from square one. And it's a huge uphill battle, and we make gains every time. But policy is an incremental game. You don't get a new system overnight. You have to work the long, hard process of making it better every chance you get. And that takes folks in D.C., that takes folks in communities, that takes farmers doing the hard work of what they do every day, and it takes all of us speaking out and making sure that Congress knows what we want.
Is there a way to make commodity farming sustainable in your book? Because I know that in order to feed the masses of people, we need to produce a huge amount of food, and there's a lean toward urban agriculture and urban farming versus, as compared to rooftop gardens and community gardens and that sort of thing. But the whole scheme of actually feeding the huge and growing population effectively from within our own shores, is there some way for them to be better stewards?
Yeah, I think that the last thing that you say, being better stewards, is a key part of it. We really advocate for conservation programs, many of which are more utilized by those larger scale commodity farmers. Really, what we want to see is production that is good for people, good for our planet, and good for profits of farmers, good for the economy. So with that, we love seeing someone go to their local farmer's market. We love seeing people really meet the farmer, know where their food comes from. But we also realize that those direct interactions are not going to be all that is needed. You have large schools, you have large hospitals, the federal government cafeterias, you've got these larger scale demands, and therefore you really need that kind of scaled up agriculture, which we see can be done. There are massive school districts serving over 100,000 students a day that are sourcing local meat, local dairy, local fruits, vegetables, grains. So it can be done. As Sarah said, it is something that takes time, and we really need that middle piece, the infrastructure. Yeah. We need more ability to aggregate product locally, distribute it, and then, as you mentioned, be able to, for example, in a school kitchen, process and prepare it.
It's not to say we need to blow up what we're doing. It's that we want to make sure that that the work we do to feed ourselves is also at the same time ensuring that we can feed the next generation, and that we can protect our natural resources, ensure that we continue to feed ourselves really into perpetuity, because that's what's critically missing right now. Is if we feed ourselves tomorrow, but we feed ourselves in a way that ensures 50 years from now we won't be able to farm that land, we've got a really big problem. And so a lot of what this is really about is thinking about not just tomorrow, but 50 years from now. Let's make sure that the kinds of agriculture that we're putting into place across the country have that kind of a mindset.
I got a quote from Wendell Berry from a friend this morning that said, treat the people downstream from you the way that you would want to be treated by those upstream from you.
That's great.
He has a way of turning a phrase.
He does.
Yeah. So there are local organizations that are part of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition, and I would like for people to know about the Virginia organization, which is the Virginia Association for Biological Farming, and that is at vabf.org, and everyone is welcome to join and to visit their website. How else can we get the word out so that there's less resistance to this gradual change that we're working on?
I think it's something, because it's not just a once a year call a congressperson, which is still really great, but it's only one piece. I think a lot of it is it's a combination of the daily decisions we all make and the way in which we make them, and making sure that if you know you want to see farmers in your neighborhood and in your community, that you make the effort to support them and to purchase their products and to encourage your friends and family to do so as well. You know, the fastest way to build this kind of system is for us to choose every day with our dollars and with the kinds of conversations that we have for this kind of system, for a more sustainable future. And then when the time comes, it's really important to pair that with speaking out to Congress, making sure your legislator knows what you care about, because you are, you sitting at home are ultimately who he or she is responsible to. So that's a really great piece as well. And then I guess just one other thing I'll note. We often work like, let's say, just for example, if there's any farmers out there listening, you know, a lot of times farmers, they'll get really busy. We love farmers. We get to work with them all the time. And we know how busy you are. We know that you're out in the field, that you're not necessarily on your email, on your phone all the time. But helping, you know, it's really important for farmers to tell their story, for both their customers and for the people in their community and for their legislators to know what it's like to farm and the challenges that you face. So if there's any farmers out there, we love to hear from folks. We love to help folks share a story. And we think it's absolutely critical that farmers especially tell their stories to the news, to their local representative, to their community about what they do, why they do it, and how they want to make it better.
Yes. And that's actually partly why Lightly on the Ground Radio is on the air. We've spoken with a lot of farmers in our local area and with some sort of national figures such as yourselves. But we have, in the Richmond area, we have something like 20 farmers markets. And that is so amazing. Almost everyone in town could bicycle to a farmers market throughout most of the season. And then there are several markets that go on all year long because thanks to programs like the NRCS provides and these various Farm Bill programs, people have gotten season extension equipment. There was a huge high tunnel program where dozens of people around the country, or maybe hundreds, have gotten these very relatively inexpensive metal-framed, plastic-covered season extension hoop houses.
Yes, and so that's a Farm Bill program.
Yeah. So that, and you know, so as you're driving through, you know, when you're going home for the holidays this year, keep your eyes open for these odd-looking kind of Quonset hut-shaped things. And think about, there's probably beautiful greens growing in there throughout the whole year. It's our tax money at work in ways like this.
By all means, check out our website, sustainableagriculture.net. We have got a great blog if you like to get into the policy weeds. And if you want to help us speak out, you can sign up for our action alerts at sustainableagriculture.net. There's a take action page, and we'll keep you in the loop, and we'll reach out when it's a really critical time for Congress to hear from you.
Great. Helen Dumbalis and Sarah Hackney, Policy Associate for Marketing, Food Systems, and Rural Development, and Grassroots Director, respectively. Thank you so much for making time in your very busy schedule to talk with us. And I hope that you'll
absolutely
be back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I hope we can get you back in a few weeks as progress is occurring.
Let's hope for that. And thanks to all the listeners for tuning in.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is Lightly on the Ground Radio signing off. You can visit us on our Facebook page to learn who's going to be on and to put in your 2 cents worth. You can email sunny at WRIR.org. Thank everyone for listening, and thanks again for being on the radio with us. We hope to see you on the radio again, and until then, walk in the light and live lightly on the ground, and eat well.